We're not as far off schedule as we were when we started this. but we are still off a little bit. We're slated for an hour and 10 minutes of discussion and coffee break. And I think we'll maybe not do that. We could maybe go about 10 minutes, or as long as we need up to that point, to synthesize or hear from the audience and speakers about what the common points of knowledge here that we've learned about software, hardware, application performance issues, and a wide variety of things with the nanotechnology bent in general, about what we could, how we could synthesize these in terms of outstanding needs or resources or practices that would be good to adopt within this community. Is there anybody who has a strong opinion on what should be done? I would offer one thing that I saw throughout several talks, including talks not from this session, which people mentioning software sanity and things like that, you know, the spending 60% of your time debugging somebody else's code. I think if you go into other industries that rely on software, the practices that are used to engineer software are very, very different and much more rigorous in a lot of ways. That's much more hands-on approach to, if we spend the effort now to make this work from a software engineering perspective, we'll all be better off, you know, 5-10 years from now. And I think that's what I identified as one of the common threads through several of the talks, but that's what I do too, so I may be biased there.
Yeah. In that regard, I think what's interesting is that one of the articles we were given to read, in fact, two of them were by Greg Wilson on software carpentry, effectively preaching the same kinds of points. And his claim is that we'd be embarrassed, this has partly to do with service science, that most people would be embarrassed to publish their code if they knew how poorly documented and how it was, you know, grown kind of topsy. So I don't know what to make of this. It's an observation, but perhaps there's some benefit to become to giving rationales for enforcing the discipline that people should practice for their own good by having other outlets, people passing on code and so on.
Yeah, so there are strong motivations to do that. And then, you know, in terms of what does it take to change the culture or to change practices, you know, I think the carrot works a lot better than the stick. You know, the postdoc or professor who likes to have the tarball on their workstation, and if somebody wants it, they send it to him through email or whatever, that person is probably not inherently passionate about software design. And they have a mechanism that works for them. But if there are rewards, whether it's some of the things that Ian talked about in terms of producing incentives where they have less burden to make the gears keep turning and they can focus on the science and the really API to their research more than the nuts and bolts of it, that's appealing.
Yeah, and it isn't just the code, too. The whole process of verification and validation is something which is frequently not necessarily as enforced, and again, I'm taking more of the papers in that set of references that we got discussed this. That's a problem.
Yeah, I visited an SLM that was a couple of years ago, and they told me that it's true, but they don't allow their scientists to write code. They said they can't afford to have them do that. in a couple of ways, I mean, they're highly paid people and also software engineers, but they're supposed to do science and software engineers write the software. So if that's true, that's probably a good sign. Mostly, I mean, it's easy to criticize people's software engineering practices, but I think a lot of these scientists are probably doing the best they can given very limited investment. Software, we tend not to think of software as being expensive, but it is. And one big astronomy project at Chicago was the Sloan Digital Sky Survey. And I think the original project didn't budget anything for software because they figured that, like always, grad students would write it in their spare time. And eventually they ended up spending about $20 million, which is not a lot. Basically, what I did.
Yes?
Yeah, I wanted to make one connected to that and connecting to the last talk and to the talk on molecular electronics this morning. I think in which in this morning it was quite obvious that there are fields in which we're doing simulations in which the theory is still moving quite fast. So the underlying theory is still developing, and for that we need scientists, also engineers, but also scientists working quite actively in things related to the software development. But at the same time, things are getting so sophisticated and complicated, and essentially the new computational demands are making it worse in many ways, that we're starting to reinvent the wheel every time whenever we're doing electronic structure, for instance, in that particular case, or any any other similar examples. That's the field in which I am active. Reinventing the wheel every time on a higher and higher and higher degree of sophistication, which I think is quite wasteful.
You mean at a hardware level? At the software level.
At the software level. And so what I would think is that an interesting proposal for something like the kind of organizations that are behind this workshop. So if there are resources, what I would consider interesting would be to try to work out things from the bottom of the kinds of software that is being developed now, actively developed, that are pieces that are more or less stable, and carry them into the libraries that Juan, for instance, was mentioning.
This as a constraint gets pushed to software specialists, and I don't know what other people's experiences are, but anytime I've had any occasion to have someone build software outside of the group, it's been really a disappointment. And maybe it could be resolved if the scientists would talk to the software developers in the way we've been encouraging the scientists or the laboratory people to talk to the computational scientists. I don't know what other people's experiences are, but that sounds like a wrong trend in some way. Is anybody else worried about this or disturbed?
I guess I would see it as a shift of responsibilities, right? There will be certain specialists that are tool builders on the machine level. There will be specialists that put these tools together on a modular type level at a different level. And maybe that's happened at the science part, right? And then there's a scientist directing that. I can't conceive of my graduate students wanting to parallelize or implement algorithms to the level of 100,000 cores or a million cores. Mm-hmm. There is no reward system for them unless they want to become that tool builder at the lowest level. Maybe that's where their career path takes them. But that's typically not what the nanotechnology students that we have would do.
You know, what I see, however, is an advantage of such a person going into your group and then becoming a developer is that person will speak science. And that's a concern. The scientists, in some way, have to speak software development. They don't have to do it, but they have to somehow have a sense of it.
So at the very individual level, if you're talking about this one individual moving, there's the computational sciences engineering programs and designated emphases to try to recognize that on an individual level and build incentives towards that direction. On an institutional scale, if you look at something like SciDAC, that does a good job of answering this question, where am I going to find somebody that's going to help me implement this algorithm or methodology? That's a marketplace where these things get collaborated on anymore.
SciDAC's already the national labs, though, right? That's who you're talking about, right?
Well, I'm not saying SciDAC itself, but that model, I think.
I see. Is,
I think the biggest problem we have with those kinds of cross-disciplinary projects is just a communication problem. And I assume that's one of the things that was affecting the quality of the code that you're talking about getting from other groups is they don't understand what it is you want them to write. And so because you don't actually have a common language because you're both so specialized in your areas. So we've been working a lot on that problem of how you communicate Kate across the disciplines and sort of trying to come up with ways of talking about different classes of algorithms. So you don't have to be a specialist on the application domain to understand what an FFT looks like, right? And computationally. And so that is one
one thing that I think helps. I mean, it is about defining those interfaces. The other positive thing is that, in some sense, that we're not in this alone right now, because until now, parallelism was just something that was being done by this community, and now it's everybody. So I think that there will be solutions for the multi-core chips that are going to come from the general computing community, which we may be able to leverage. I mean, whether they'll be close enough to what we need, I think we would have to wait and see, but I think there will be. So we may, you know, it may not be that your students will have to worry about million-way parallelism. Somebody will be worrying about it within the chip, and maybe you'll be worrying about it between the chips.
Okay, I was going to try to draw things to a close so we could have a short break before jumping into the next one.
Just one comment. Okay. So I'd be interested to hear what other people have to say about this, but one of the problems we run into is that the funding model from the agencies just is not very conducive to doing the kinds of things that we're talking about here. If you're in the science area, you're funded to do research on new science. If you're a mathematician like myself, it's new algorithms. If you're a computer scientist, it's new languages or computer architecture research. And there's no funding model for bringing together people and developing software, much less maintaining the software that kind of comes out of these projects. And so it may take a concerted community effort to go back to the agencies and say, you know, you have to put some money into both software development and software maintenance.
Okay, well, thanks again to everybody.